Me, I am an alcoholic. My name is Carrie. I always have been an alcoholic. I always will be an alcoholic. I have a home group, which is the New Horizons group, in Bend, Oregon, and we meet currently online 7 days a week. We usually meet in downtown Bend, right by the library, and right across the street from the family kitchen. So we get all sorts of, that's where homeless people go to eat. So it's a really good place to, catch those newcomers, to fish for the low bottoms, which are the ones that I like working with. Their gift of desperation makes it easier I can't give you, I can give you a lot. I can't give you the willingness. Those people have been given the willingness, and it makes it really easy sometimes to work with people who are willing. So my sobriety date is March 25th, 2010. I have a sponsor. I still use my sponsor. It's not a sponsor in name only. I just spent a good while with her on the phone this morning, good while on the phone with her last night. This work that we're going to go through in the next 13 weeks, it's wonderful to know. It wasn't easy for me to get to know it. The only reason I know what I know is because I've taken so many other people through the work. It's not because somebody showed me the work, it's because of the people that I've taken through the work. But it's another thing. So it's one thing to know it, and it's another thing to practice it, right? And that's why I love the flyer that was made for this workshop, because it says taking steps 1 through 9, practicing steps 10 through 12. Taking steps 1 through 9 for me were probably, definitely, hands down, the hardest thing I've ever done in my life was to recover from alcoholism. I will be using that word. The big book uses that word. If you are offended by the word recovered alcoholic, I would suggest that you just sign off now. I mean, it's throughout the book. It's in every chapter of the big book. There's no way around it. And I am big book sober. One of the things that I still have to do on a daily basis, even though I consider myself, as the book calls it, a recovered alcoholic, is I have to stay in constant contact with my higher power, but I also have to stay accountable with my sponsor. And I know a lot of big book thumpers will say, oh, your sponsor just takes you through the steps. What else is it for? Well, when I get to my 10th step, which I try to do on a daily basis, it doesn't say if we were wrong. It says when we were wrong. And I'm frequently wrong. Never in doubt, but frequently wrong. And I have to use my sponsor for that. And sometimes she can hold a mirror up that has a more clear picture of myself. I can hold a very distorted mirror up to myself, and it's my sponsor's job to kind of wipe down that distort, to kind of Windex stuff off and show me my higher power's perspective. She's always leading me back to my higher power. I love the wording on this flyer. I have worked steps 1 through 9. That was the hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life. And I've given childbirth. Okay. So recovering from alcoholism is not something that I ever want to have to go through again. I respect those who are 20 years sober thinking that they're still recovering from alcoholism. I do not wish anyone a lengthy recovery. I wish you a painful and quick recovery. I don't think that my recovery would have been so quick if it weren't so painful. My pain has been the touchstone of my spiritual growth. I don't do anything without a whole lot of pain behind it. And that's just my experience. I know a woman speaker that I used to listen to a lot, and she's passed on, but she used to say that she's been three types of drunks. She's had three phases of her development of her alcoholism. Number one, she was a practicing alcoholic, a drinking alcoholic. Number two, she was a recovering alcoholic when she was working through the steps and she was taking the steps. And number three, she was a recovered alcoholic. And she says there's only one of those three phases of her alcoholism that she will never do again, because it was so painful, painstaking, as the book calls it. Working steps 1 through 9 at the 9th step promises, it calls it painstaking, if we were painstaking about this phase of our development. And that's been my experience. I don't ever want to have to recover from alcoholism again. And that's really my main motivation for sticking with steps 10, 11, and 12 and staying so vigilant, you know, with those maintenance steps, with those growth steps, whatever you want to call it. I call them the maintenance steps because that's what the big book calls them. And that's what we're here to study, is the big book. So I am a recovered alcoholic. I have a sponsor who I use, and I sponsor women who sponsor women. And I don't sponsor women in name only. I went through a phase where if you ask me how many women I sponsored, my answer would be about half of them, because like that's probably about how many I actually sponsored. They would call me their sponsor, you know. A lot of people used to call me their sponsor, but they didn't call me, you know. They would use me in name only, but they didn't use me. And today I realized that I'm doing not just me a disservice, I'm doing them a disservice. Because if you think, and I'm doing Alcoholics Anonymous a disservice, because then when you drink and you go out and you say, I was working the AA program, I had a sponsor and everything. It's like, oh, that sponsor was me. Was I doing my job? Or should I have had that conversation, which I just had to have, a painful conversation, where I have to inform the person who's calling me their sponsor, you know, I haven't been sponsoring you for a little while now. And if you're not going to utilize what I have to offer, then it's doing you a disservice. If I let you go ahead and think that you're being sponsored in AA. And so I don't hang on to the feet draggers for very long. This is a program of action. And that's what I expect of the women that I sponsor. And that's what's expected of me. So I tell you those things, that I have a sponsor, that I sponsor women, that I have a home group, because those are the things that keep me right in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? It's not to pat myself on the back. It's to let you know that I have women on this side of me, women on this side of me. I'm surrounded by a group of people that know me. I'm not just a home group member in name only. I'm a member in good standing, which means I'm a permanent fixture at my home group. I don't do service at other groups. I don't think that other groups need me or they're going to die. I went through that phase. I'm a permanent fixture at my home group, which means even if I don't have service that day, it's my job as a member in good standing to show up a half hour early, to greet the newcomers, and to stay until I'm like one of the last people in the room, to make sure that no newcomers or other home group members have any questions or concerns or things that are bothering them, and that I can be present, and that I can be a working part, a small part of a great whole. Because my higher power has made it also abundantly clear to me that I don't get to be the big shot. Big shotism will kill me. I don't get to go and just go and speak wherever I'm asked to speak. If you're in this room and you think that I'm talking to you, and you're feeling uncomfortable right now, I'm probably am talking to you, but there's probably 20 of you at least. So you're not alone. And I'm talking about myself. I'm talking about myself, because it can be really easy for, you know, to be asked to speak at a conference or something. And for me to say, oh, well, it's on the traditions. And who else are they going to ask to speak on the traditions who know them as well as I do? You know, oh my gosh, it would be selfish and self-centered of me not to agree and accept this speaking engagement. Nah, I got a home group. I got to be there to greet that newcomer when they walk in the door and tell them, welcome to New Horizons. My name is Carrie. And that's my job in AA. And so my instant response when somebody asks me to speak in Alcoholics Anonymous and my home group is going on is, oh, sorry, that's the same time as my home group. But any other time, I would love to do that for you. And that's what the definition of integrity is for me. And the big book talks about that too. And we'll go through that stuff in the next 13 weeks. I don't get to be the center of it all. I don't get to be the big shot. I get to be one among many. And that's what keeps me sober today. That's what keeps me sober. So with that, I'm going to talk a little bit about what we're going to be working out of. So this is the study edition big book. You can get one from GSO, AA World Services. I think it's called the abridged version. I think probably Dee will put the link in the chat at some point. If not, email me and I'll send you. Or you can get it from your inner group office, your local inner group office. What's cool about this book, okay, is it's $5 for one. I mean, that's super cool. And it's large print for another. So what my home group does with these, we have a big book study at my home group every Wednesday. And we used to order, and we go through a lot of books. We're a pretty large group. And we used to order regular big books with the stories in the back, which the stories are wonderful. I'm not gonna talk bad about the stories, but you don't study the stories, right? The stories are put there for the isolated and the incarcerated, quote unquote. That's from Bill Wilson, who can't make a meeting to get that identification, right? To get that magic of me too, because they can't come to a meeting and hear a speaker meeting in real life. So they're like speaker meetings in print, right? And so we have those on hand definitely for our newcomers, but we were going through a lot of our big book studies the doctor's opinion through page 164, the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the back of the books, like the front was falling apart, and the back of the books were still perfect and intact, right? And so we were wasting a lot. Well, these came out a few years back. The General Service Office started publishing these a few years back, and they're only $5 and they're large print. So even the old timers, because like the average member in my home group is like 200 years old, and nobody needs glasses to see the print, right? And it's cool because we can just, and they're soft print, so they're flexible and they don't fall apart. And gosh, now I'm sounding like a salesman. I really love this big book. I really love these books because we can order them, a whole case of them for $100, 20 of them for $100, you know, and we were spending a lot of money on big books. And so that's what I'm going to be working out of. And it has only the part of the book that is meant to be studied. And then also Dr. Bob's nightmare, that's put in there for historical purposes, which I appreciate as well. But it has all of the appendices. It has the forewords. It has the preface. It has the doctor's opinion. Has the first 103 pages, which are the 12 steps, and then it has the four, you know, forgotten chapters, which chapter the wives, family afterward to employer, and vision for you. Sorry. So that's what I'm going to be using. We're not going to be doing a step a week. The steps are not all equal. So I'm going to briefly explain what I mean by that. You'll hear people in meetings, mainly it's people who don't believe in singleness of purpose, I believe. You'll hear people in meetings saying some stuff like, "Well, look," and they point to the steps on the wall. Alcohol is only in the first step. It's only 1/12 of the program. First of all, it's not. It's not in the 12th step too. They just don't see that. And second, well, yeah, if you're working the steps, if your understanding of the steps is from what you're reading off the wall, you probably have an off the wall understanding of the steps, Joe and Charlie, right? And why I say that is because if you look at this study edition big book, which I'm using, and you go to page 44, because the first step is the first 44 pages of the big book plus the doctor's opinion, which is like an additional 8 or 9 pages. So that's a lot, right? And then you go to the first 103 pages, which is the 12 steps in its totality. So 103 pages. So this is the program right here. That's the program. And this portion is the first step. I don't know if you guys can see that. The first step, and this is steps 2 through 12. So I don't know if you guys can see that, but the first step, the part about alcohol, well, it's half the program. It's half the program, you guys. So half the program of action is the first step. So we're not going to get through the first step on the first week. But we're going to try to segment the first 103 pages equally. We're going to try to do that. Wow, I'm really big for myself right now. Here we go. So don't get discouraged if it takes us 3 or 4 weeks to do the first step. And then you start thinking, oh my God, we're going to be here for a year. It's not the case. Once we get rolling after the first step, once we get into the program of action, it goes by pretty quick. So I guess we're just going to go ahead and start. I'm going to read some, but I'm not going to read to you this whole book. I'm not going to spend 13 hours reading to you. The way I go through the big book is the way my sponsor went through it with me. When I'm with a sponsee, I go through the big book line by line, word for word, page by page for the first 103 pages, which is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Those are the directions. I will mention briefly the 12 and 12. I don't want anyone in this room to think that I am anti 12 and 12. I'm not anti 12 and 12. I was working with someone today, not even an hour ago. She's probably on this call, a newer sponsee. She has time in the program, but she's newer to me. And we're going through the work. And she asked me about the 12 and 12. And I told her, I'm not anti 12 and 12. It's just not where the program of action comes from, right? The history behind the 12 and 12 was we have a clear-cut path laid out in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in the big book. It is our program. It is our clear-cut directions. When the 12 and 12 was written, Bill was still having a hard time selling the fellowship on the traditions. Now the traditions had passed, right, in 1950. They passed unanimously, but Bill was still having a hard time getting the fellowship to want to hear about the traditions. So he wrote this book on the traditions, and Hank Parkhurst and a couple others pointed out, nobody's going to buy a book called The 12 Traditions, Bill, right? And like nobody would have. And Bill's a salesman. They knew what they were doing. So they thought, well, what if you write 12 essays on the steps too? And you put those in. And Bill's like, yeah, I could do that. You know, now I have 12 years of experience in practicing these principles. They might be some really good essays. And guess what? They turned out to be phenomenal essays. Like phenomenal. I love the essays in the 12 and 12. But they're not the directions for recovery. They're one person's experience of working those 12 steps for 12 years. Or however long Bill had when he wrote the 12 and 12. And even in the 12 and 12, he refers to them as 24 little essays. Even the essays on the traditions, those aren't the traditions. The traditions are in their entirety, in their long form, in the back of the 12 and 12. But those essays in the 12 and 12, those aren't the steps and they're not the traditions. They're just 24 essays that one person wrote that are phenomenal essays, but they're not the steps and the traditions. So when the third edition came out, so we didn't have the 12 and 12 when the second edition came out. When the third edition came out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, we had the 12 and 12, and people were taking. So, you know, I was asked about Chris Raymer's comment on the 12 and 12. I said, you know, I start to kind of hate the 12 and 12 too, but I don't hate the 12 and 12. I love the 12 and 12. It's what people have done to the 12 and 12 that I hate. It's how we've perverted the 12 and 12, and we use it for something that it can't be used for is my pet peeve. But it's not the 12 and 12. It's just that there were people who, once the 12 and 12 came out, they thought that implied that's where you go through the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. That, I mean, it's called 12 steps and 12 traditions. So, you know, I can see where that could be misinterpreted. So there were people who maybe started thinking that they can, I don't see any directions in the 12 and 12. Maybe you guys have, I haven't found a single direction in the 12 and 12. The directions are in the big book, but people who started utilizing that for the steps, GSO was like, oh no, what are we going to do? And so by the time the third edition of the big book came out, you guys will see that on the inside of the cover page, it's Dee, do you have one present? Do you have the, what is that called? A book cover. It's called a dust cover. On the inside of the dust cover, there's a description of where the 12 steps can be found and what our message is. And it's the and it says that our basic text, the first 164, actually it's very specific, the first 164 pages of the big book is our message. That is the AA message. That is the 12 steps. And so they put that on the third edition to kind of correct the, you know, people from trying to, from our members, from trying to, you know, we have magnificent alcoholic magnifying minds. We can complicate the hell out of anything. And for me, I was not any different. My first sponsor had to confiscate the 12 and 12 from me, and she confiscated it. And I was on my fourth step, and we're sitting in her living room. And I remember her saying, because I overthink everything. I have to do it the best. I have to be perfect. I have to understand it fully. And what I didn't understand is you can't understand your way into a spiritual awakening. You know, you got to act yourself into a spiritual awakening. I just had to do the actions. I had to take the actions. I had to take the suggestions that I didn't yet understand. That's part of the willingness. That's part of that's part of what gave me that spiritual awakening. And so when I was sneaking my second 12 and 12 that my sister in sobriety had let me borrow, I was still kind of reading, and I started quoting, not quoting, but asking questions that she could tell I was digging in the 12 and 12. And she's like, she almost had to confiscate two 12 and 12s from me. She finally gave my 12 and 12 back to me once I made it through the 12 steps out of the big book. And she said, now we can start reading in the 12 and 12, because a lot of the way the 12 and 12 was written, if you guys haven't noticed, is toward the sponsor says, and then the sponsor might say to the prospect, blah, blah, blah. And I love that about the 12 and 12. So I'm not anti 12 and 12. I'm not. I love the 12 and 12. I think that they're wonderful essays. But for these next 13 weeks, and this is orientation, and so this is my opportunity to tell you guys what we're going to do for the next 13 weeks, is not going to be doing, we're not working out of the 12 and 12. We're working out of the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, which is what our big book calls the basic text and our clear-cut directions. So let me see. Did I cover... covered the 12 and 12. I covered. All right. So I guess we'll just go ahead and get started on a couple of highlights. I'm not going to read word for word, because like, if I did that, there might be two of you left at the end of 13 weeks. Nobody likes to be read to. I'm going to go through my highlights. If you would like to adopt some of my highlights, great. If you don't want to, wonderful. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just sharing my own experience as I have gained the experience in taking others through. Again, you know, I didn't learn anything about this book when my sponsor took me through the first nine steps. Nothing. I couldn't have even told you what I did. That is not how I learned anything about the big book. That's how I had my spiritual awakening. But that's not how I know anything about the big book. What I know of the big book is from taking literally hundreds of women through the big book at the kitchen table, in the car, in the park, at the library, face to face, shoulder to shoulder, across the kitchen table, one alcoholic to the next. And that's where I get any knowledge that I have of the big book is through being a conduit from my higher power and helping the next alcoholic to achieve sobriety, which is my primary purpose today. And so if you want to know the big book, start taking people through the big book. And that's the best way to learn the big book. I don't want anybody to think that at the end of these 13 weeks, you're going to be some sort of a big book expert. I'm not a big book expert. If you run into a big book expert, you probably want to avoid them. But I do have a lot of experience with the big book. And again, that experience only comes from having experience with it. It's not a learned thing. So I will share with you some of my experience. And I'm going to be sharing, you know, I was told that this first hour was also kind of, this first day was also kind of for me to qualify and stuff. And I'll qualify. I'm a real alcoholic of the hopeless variety. I have an obsession of the mind that tells me to drink when it's not being treated with the maintenance steps. And I have a physical allergy of the body that once I ingest alcohol in any form at all, I have a body that just demands more and I can't stop of my own accord until I run out, blackout, or pass out. And that's, you know, that's my alcoholism. But as we go through, I will be sharing little bits about my story and my personal, you know, experiences and my personal relationship with alcohol, with King Alcohol. And I will reserve the right to do that. I also want to make sure that, you know, this is a 90-minute meeting every week on Fridays. I want to make sure that I have plenty of time for Q&A. And if I am saying something that maybe I'm saying too fast, or I'm saying that's like I said it wrong because I am not perfect and I can say things that, you know, are not easy to understand, or I can be kind of confusing sometimes, whatever. Put in the chat Ross, give them your questions, because at the end of that hour, that second half hour is to answer all those questions. So don't be shy, you know, don't be shy with the questions. And if I can answer the questions, I will, even if my answer is, I don't know, but I'll find out for you. That's my favorite answer, because then I get to learn too. So, and I'm not shy about going, you know, to the books and to my sponsor and to my service sponsor and getting the answer. But I won't just pretend to know. In the preface and on my study edition, that's page VII. I don't know what it is on yours, unless you have a book like mine. The second paragraph says, because this book has become the basic text, and I have the words basic text highlighted in my big book, for our society and has helped such large numbers of alcoholic men and women to recovery, there exists a strong sentiment against any radical changes being made in it. Therefore, the first portion of this volume describing what? AA recovery program, the AA recovery program. I have the AA recovery program highlighted. I got those two highlights from my sponsor. And what do those two highlights mean to me? They mean that the basic text, this book, is the AA recovery program. Basically starts out by telling you what this book is, right? Meetings, they're wonderful. They're one third of the triangle. They're the fellowship. They're not the program. Meetings are not the recovery program. I talk about the fellowship a lot. I love the fellowship. I fell in love with the fellowship long before. I was in love with the fellowship when I still hated the people who carried around a big book with them. I avoided like the plague people who carried around a big book with them, right? I loved the fellowship, but that is not the recovery program. And so I'm very careful with my words today. You won't hear me say when I first came to the program, because when I first came to the program, I was probably a year, you know, I'd been in the fellowship for over a year. I say when I first came to the fellowship. You know, the program is not, those two words are not interchangeable for me. I ask the women that I sponsor when they go to AA meetings to bring their big book with them. Why? Well, first of all, you wouldn't go to an algebra class without your algebra book, right? And B, because it's a constant reminder that this is the program. It's easy to start to think that the meetings are the program, and they're not. They're one third of the triangle, but they're a completely different third. So this is an interesting little factoid. At the bottom of this page, my preface says the second printing of this first edition added appendix spiritual experience. In the second edition, the appendices on AA tradition, the medical view and religious view of the AA, of AA, the Lasker Award, and information on how to contact AA were added, comma, and the appendix on the Alcoholic Foundation was discontinued. A lot of big books don't say that. I don't know why mine says that. I have no clue why mine says that. It's not a special book. But I know that only because I go through this with so many other sponsees. And I think one woman who I just started sponsoring recently, Chris, she's in the room, and she had an older book. She's been in the program for a lot longer than I have. She has a book, and we were going through this page, and her book doesn't say that. And we were like, why doesn't your book say that? So, I mean, that's another thing that is kind of cool about going through the book with people, is you find out little things like, wow, they don't even wait to change for addition to addition to change things. You know, we can change things printing by printing. So my book says that the appendix on the Alcoholic Foundation was discontinued. I bet you, looking around the room, some people in this room know why the appendix on the Alcoholic Foundation was discontinued. I bet you that some people don't know why. The Alcoholic Foundation was before we adopted our tradition, specifically Tradition 7. We didn't have a tradition of self-support. Words like foundation and donation were okay to use before we had the seventh tradition. Words like foundation and donation are bad words in AA today because they imply a charitable cause. They imply a charitable organization. We don't donate to our home groups. We don't donate to intergroup. Our home groups don't donate to GSO. We contribute. These are spiritual principles. And the reason why the appendix on the Alcoholic Foundation was removed is because we no longer have an Alcoholic Foundation. We changed the name when we adopted these principles to the General Service Board of Alcoholics Anonymous and AA World Services. And so that's why that appendix was removed, for those who have that in there. I don't know why my book has that in there and Chris's doesn't, but that's just one of the amazing things you find when going through the big book. So the next page, which is the second page of the preface, has some amazing highlights that I don't want to pass up. At the bottom of the page, in the last paragraph, the paragraph that starts out all changes made over the years in the big book, and then it emphasizes, it puts in quotes what the big book is, AA's fond name for this volume, have had the same purpose to represent the current membership of Alcoholics Anonymous more accurately, right? So here we go. And thereby to reach more alcoholics. Here's a highlight. If you have a drinking problem, third tradition, we hope that you will pause in reading one of the 42 personal stories and think, yes, that happened to me. That's a highlight. Yes, that happened to me. Or more important, yes, I felt like that. Or most important, yes, I believe this program can work for me too. That's the magic of Me Too. That is the magic of Me Too. That paragraph is really important to me because it's telling us why we have the stories in the back, right? For identification, for the newcomers, which is why when they want to update every edition, which is why when we have a fifth edition come out, it'll do exactly what the fourth edition did, and it'll do exactly what the third edition did, and so on and so forth, is the stories will be updated, some of the stories, because the stories aren't there for us. They're not there for us to study. We don't study each other's speaker meetings. I don't listen to your story and study it. They're for identification. They're for that magic of me too. And so to have that identification that we were offered when we got to the fellowship, we want to make sure that that identification is, you know, includes the use of a cell phone, you know, the use of Zoom, the use of things that nowadays people can relate to. That doesn't mean that we're going to change the program of action. That doesn't mean that we're going to change the big book. The stories in the back are merely that. They're just speaker meetings. And they're there for that magic of me too. Dr. Bob was an alcoholic who couldn't get sober. And he found the Oxford groups, which, for those of you who don't know, it was basically a lot like AA. They even had these six tenets that they used in the Oxford group. They were basically the same. Like they were, you know, we'll get to that in the big book. But the one thing, Dr. Bob couldn't get sober. Dr. Bob, in 2.5 years of being at the Oxford group, couldn't get 2.5 days put together of sobriety until Bill Wilson come by. And Bill Wilson, just some drunk from some stockbroker from New York, comes by and he starts sharing himself and about himself with Dr. Bob, and started sharing, I start drinking and I can't stop. Dr. Bob said, me too. Bill Wilson said, I tell Lois I'm going to be home at 9, and sometimes I'm not home until the next morning. Dr. Bob said, oh, me too. Bill Wilson said, sometimes I can't even remember what I did the night before. And Dr. Bob said, me too. Bill Wilson said, I try to quit drinking altogether. And I swear on a stack of Bibles. And then I'm drunk. And Dr. Bob said, me too. And that magic of me too, that day in the gatehouse in 1935, Mother's Day 1935, that's where Alcoholics Anonymous was born, because of that magic of me too, because of these highlights that we just said. Yes, that happened to me. Yes, I felt like that. And yes, I believe this program can work for me too. So what do we have that the Oxford group didn't have? That identification. The Oxford group was a whole bunch of people trying to get, some of them might've been alcoholic. Others were drug addicts. Others were sex addicts. Others were trying to quit gambling. Others were trying to, it didn't have a singleness of purpose. It didn't have that magic of me too. It didn't have that identification that the entire foundation of Alcoholics Anonymous was founded upon. And that's what the stories are for. So forward to the first edition. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Which reminds me, let's go back for you big book thumping recovered alcoholics who love the word. Let's go back to the title page. Alcoholics Anonymous, the story of how many, this is on the very, very title page. This is like the very first page that has any words. Says Alcoholics Anonymous. It looks like this. The story of how many thousands of men and women have started recovering one day at a time from alcoholism. Oh, it doesn't say that. My eyes were going bad for a second. The story of how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism. And the reason that that is so important is because that is the first piece of hope that this book offers. That is the first piece of hope, that we're not going to be suffering, white knuckling it from one day to the next, wanting to drink, but trying to practice our willpower with all of our might every day until the rest of our miserable existence, and then finally die with maybe begging for a drink in hand. No, 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 that's not the program of action. That's not the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. We do have a solution. We have a solution here, and we do recover. And that's what the title page offers, is a little bit of hope. is a little bit of hope because thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism. And I have recovered from alcoholism. I don't want to drink today. I don't suffer from the allergy because I don't drink. Why don't I drink? Because I don't suffer from the obsession. Why don't I suffer from the obsession? Because it has been removed. 10th step promises it doesn't exist for me. I am neither cocky nor am I afraid. Sometimes I'm cocky. That's what the 10th step is for. And then I get afraid, but for the most part, you know, that's a message of hope. So going back to what my book says is IX, and you guys have a little bit different probably. So forward to the first edition. Again, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, not a hopeless state, but a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, to show other alcoholics, and this is in italics, precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. It's the program of action. That's what this book is for, is to show other alcoholics, not kind of how we have recovered, not to offer some loose suggestions on how we have recovered, but to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. And that is the main purpose of this 13-week workshop. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no other authentication will be necessary. Not even the 12 and 12? Nope. Not even the 12 and 12. No other authentication will be necessary. We think this account of all our experiences will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. And besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. We're not so arrogant to think that we created these spiritual principles. Right? People have been utilizing these spiritual principles for thousands of years, not just hundreds of years, thousands of years, since before man first crushed grapes. These spiritual principles don't have anything to do with alcoholism or alcohol. It just happens to be the solution we found is these spiritual principles. But the spiritual principles themselves, they have their advantages for all. There are people all over the world that are not alcoholic living by these spiritual principles every day. They might not have to work at it like we alcoholics do, but these spiritual principles have their advantages for all. It is important that we remain anonymous. Okay, we're going to go ahead and skip a little bit. Dee, you don't want me pointing out all the, I won't point them out all. I won't point them out all. I am going to point out one thing about the traditions. I won't point out all the traditions in the first 164 pages, but I am going to, because I am a little bit obsessed with that, but it's just a phase I'm going through. Don't worry. It'll last 2 years, maybe. But I am going to point out one thing that, you know, my second spiritual awakening happened as a result of the traditions, not as a result of the steps. And the reason why is because when I first was introduced to this book, I bristled with antagonism because people were talking about it like it was the Bible. Like people were talking about it. They would say it is divinely inspired. I would want to puke on my shoes when I would hear that. And I didn't believe that. I'm like, you know, then years later when I realized, oh my God, like people with not even 4 years of sobriety wrote this. And it's like a stockbroker and a butt doctor. Like, really? I mean, there had to have been some divine inspiration there. It couldn't just be two idiots like putting their heads together. You know, like, of course it's divinely inspired. And then when I realized this is what's really bizarre about this, okay, the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, they didn't come until a good decade after this book was written. Right? We didn't adopt the traditions until 1950. This book was written in 1939. So I don't know. I can't explain this. I can't explain it, but you can find every single one of those 12 traditions in the first 164 pages of this book. Every one of those 12 traditions can be found in the first 164 pages of this book that was written a decade before the traditions were written. I don't know what that's about other than divine inspiration. And starting with the foreword to the first edition, let's go to the second page of the foreword to the first edition. It's a small page. It's like a half a page. These traditions, well, this paragraph, they didn't call these traditions because the traditions hadn't been thought of. This is the foreword to the first edition, right? This is in 1939. There are no dues or fees whatsoever. That sounds a lot like tradition seven to me. The only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stop drinking. I don't know about you guys, but that sounds a lot like tradition three. A lot of people ask me when I do tradition workshops, when did the word honest come out of tradition three? And my answer is the word honest was never in tradition three. They never took it out of something that they never, this was written long before the traditions. The short form of the tradition has always been a desire to stop drinking, not an honest desire. This was written years before the tradition was written. Like divine inspiration, guys. Like, I love this stuff. The only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stop drinking. That's tradition three. We are not allied with any particular faith, sect, or denomination. I don't know. That sounds a lot like tradition six and 10 to me. Nor do we oppose anyone. You know, that sounds a lot like tradition six and 10. We simply wish to be helpful with all afflicted. Tradition five. I mean, those sound like traditions to me, but I don't know. It's, and they're throughout the whole book. It's amazing. So the foreword to the second edition, again, they use that term recovered alcoholic since the original foreword of this book was written in 1939, a wholesale miracle has taken place. Our earliest printing voiced the hope that every alcoholic who journeys will find the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous at his destination. Already continues the early text, twos and threes and fives of us have sprung up in other communities. 16 years have elapsed between the first printing of this book and the presentation in 1955 of our second edition. So the second edition, the second edition came out in 1955. That's when our third legacy was adopted, which is our service structure, our third legacy of service. In 1950 is when the traditions were adopted. So this second edition came out 5 years after the traditions were adopted. So the second edition, actually, it does have that, you know, this is not too amazing because the second edition, the foreword to the second edition was written after the traditions were adopted. So Alcoholics Anonymous has mushroomed into nearly 6,000 groups whose membership is far above 150,000 recovered alcoholics, not recovering alcoholics. So there's that word again. On the next page, where it talks about Dr. Next page of the doctor's opinion or of the foreword to the second edition, Dr. William D. Silkworth, a New York specialist in alcoholism, who is now accounted no less than a medical saint by AA members and whose story in the early days of our society appears in the next pages. That's from the doctor's opinion. They're talking about Dr. Silkworth writing the doctor's opinion. From this doctor, the broker is Bill Wilson, had learned the grave nature of alcoholism. So Bill learned the grave nature of alcoholism from Dr. Silkworth. Though he could not accept all the tenets of the Oxford group, because remember the Oxford group had tenets. They didn't call them steps like we call them. And then they're going to list the tenets. So if you guys wanted to highlight that part, you can. He was convinced, here's the Oxford group tenets. He was convinced of the need for moral inventory. So Bill liked that tenet. That was an okay tenet with Bill. Confession of personal defects, restitution to harms, restitution to those harmed, helpfulness to others, and the necessity of a belief in a dependence upon God. What is missing from the Oxford group? I don't know if anybody notices, but there's no identification. There's no first step there. That's why the Oxford group, nope, I'll keep my opinions to myself. So Those are the tenets that the Oxford group had. Basically the same steps without identification, without that magic of me too. Prior to his journey in Akron, the broker had worked hard with many alcoholics. This is again, Bill Wilson, on the theory that only an alcoholic could help another alcoholic. But he had succeeded only in keeping sober himself. Of course, I don't have my AA comes of age. I do. I can go grab it. The broker had gone to Akron on a business venture, which had collapsed, leaving him greatly in fear that he might start drinking again. He suddenly realized that in order to save himself, he must carry this message to another alcoholic. The alcoholic turned out to be Akron physician. That's Dr. Bob, right? The physician had repeatedly tried spiritual means to resolve his alcoholic dilemma, but had failed. Dr. Bob, again, he had been trying these spiritual means, moral inventory, confession of personal defects, resolution of restitution to those harms, helpfulness to others. He had been trying those tenets in the Oxford group, but failed. So I'm going to grab my comes of age just real quick. And yeah, those of you who know me know why I did that. All right. So I'm going to turn in my comes of age to page. This is the book AA Comes of Age. And I'm going to turn to page 68. All right. So where we're talking about right now in this foreword is when Dr. Bob, you know, for those of you who've seen the movie Bill Wilson or any read at Lois Remembers or any of those old time history movies and books, you'll remember that scene, you know, where Bill, he can't get anybody sober because let's face it, he was the worst 12 stepper in the history of the world, in the history of AA for the first 6 months of his sobriety, right? He was pulling drunks off bar stools that didn't even want to get sober, telling them about his white light experience, telling them, we can save you. Let's go confess your shortcomings and blah, 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 and preach in the tenets of the Oxford group. But he was not successful. He was a failure when it came to 12-stepping. And he was down on himself this one day. And he was telling Lois, and this is what you guys will remember about this, that he couldn't get anybody sober. And Lois says the magical thing that, you know, is wonderful for Al-Anon family groups. She says, oh, but Bill, you've stayed sober. Well, that's wonderful, again, for Lois. That's wonderful for Bill. That's wonderful for Al-Anon family groups. They found a way to keep their spouses sober. It would not be so wonderful for those of us in this room today who needed another alcoholic to carry the message to us in a way that we could hear. We would all be dead. If Bill never got anybody else sober, if Bill didn't get his shit together, right? And learn how to 12 step, then none of us would be sober. We wouldn't have AA. And so Bill was now with Dr. Silkworth, his doctor, and he was having the same conversation. It started out the same way. It did not end the same way as the conversation with Lois. The conversation started out, I've been doing this for 6 months. Yes, I'm sober, but I haven't been able to be successful with one other prospect. What is the matter with me? And the doc, and Silkworth says, well, you know, what is your approach? And Bill says, well, I mean, I tell him about the absolute honesty, absolute purity, absolute unselfishness, and absolute loving. This is a very big, order. Then you top it off by, oh, here we go. So Bill Wilson tells him what he's been doing. And Silkworth says, I was lost here. So, and then Silkworth says, well, no wonder they point their finger at their head and they go out and get drunk. Why don't you turn your strategy the other way around? Aren't you the very fellow who once showed me that book by psychologist James, which said that deflation at great depth is the foundation of most spiritual experiences? No, Bill, you've got the cart before the horse, Silkworth said. You've got to deflate these people first. So give them the medical business. The medical business. and give it to them hard, pour it right into them about the obsession that condemns them to drink and the physical sensitivity or allergy, the two-part nature of this disease or illness, if you prefer, allergy of the body that condemns them to go mad or die if they keep on drinking. Coming from another alcoholic, one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic, maybe that will crack those deep egos, those tough egos deep down. Only then can you begin to try out your other medicine, the ethical principles you've picked up at the Oxford groups. That means we didn't have a first step. We didn't have the magic of Me Too. We had this recovered alcoholic running around telling people what he did to get better, but he was sticking to the solution. And, you know, and I respect this. I do, because there was 2 years of my sobriety that I ran around and just carried the message as the solution. I was said, I only want to go to solution-based meetings, right? And when somebody would ask me to share in a meeting and I was supposed to be telling my story, one of the first things that I would say when I got up behind the podium was, I'm not going to tell you guys any drunkalogs. You all know how to drink. You wouldn't be here if you didn't. I'm going to stick to the solution. Our big book tells me that that's not what we do. Our big book tells me that we need to share what I was like before I found the solution as a third of my story. Then what happened as a result of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and what I'm like today as a result, right? So I was running around just sharing the steps and my spiritual awakening, just like Bill. And I was at this conference and I just got done with my share. And then after dinner, Clancy pulled me aside and he said, you know what's wrong with you, don't you? I thought he was just being an asshole, you know, and he wasn't. He was trying to help. And I said, what's wrong with me, Clancy? And he said, you got no identification. And I said, well, no, I stick to the solution. It's like, nobody's going to want your solution if they don't have the same problem. And that's what Silkworth is saying. That's why we have, I don't know, over 200 different 12-step fellowships, but they all have that identification step that is unique to every 12-step fellowship. Nobody's going to want my solution if they don't know that I drank like they drank. I went, you know, I didn't know. I didn't know that I was supposed to be sharing some of the mess along with the message. You know, no, I don't get to just bring the mess to the meeting. I get to carry the message in the meeting, but I also have to identify. I also have to share enough about what I was like before with the spiritual, with the phenomenon of craving that once it's lit, that fuse is lit, there's no turning it off. And that's what Bill was missing, you know? So he couldn't get anybody sober because he was missing that magic of Me Too, that magic moment of Me Too. Right. And then, his first prospect after this talk with Dr. Silkworth was when he was visiting Dr. Bob. And this is his first like encounter with a 12-step, his first experimenting this new approach was Dr. Bob. And that's when AA was born, you know, and it's because of this new approach. It's because, oh, wow, the guy is actually talking about the problem first. And that's why we have our first step. And that's what this paragraph is talking about. So I'll finish the paragraph. It says, but when the broker gave him Dr. Silkworth's description, right? So when Bill Wilson gave Bob Dr. Silkworth's description of the alcoholism in its hopelessness, the physician began to pursue the spiritual remedy for his malady with a willingness he had never before been able to muster. So he was listening to these Oxford group people practice these same, you know, spiritual solution, confession of personal defects, making amends, the necessity of a belief in a higher power, all of that stuff. But he wasn't pursuing it with the willingness that he now had because of that magic of Me Too. So he sobered up, never to drink again, up until the moment of his death in 1950. This seemed to prove that one alcoholic could affect another as no non-alcoholic could. No matter what your malady, no matter what your problem, you know, I mean, is it all the same spiritual sickness? Yeah, sure. That's why steps 2 through 11 are the exact same. But it's not the same identification. When I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous, I went to the meetings that made me feel the most comfortable. I was a bar drinker. I was used to chaos and drama. And I went to those meetings that provided that for me, right? Chairs are being thrown. Everybody's sleeping with everybody. Everybody's talking about everything under the sun except for alcoholism and recovery from, right? They're talking about poking, shooting, snorting, smoking, whatever the case under the sun. And I didn't identify. It was fun. Got in a lot of trouble with those people. I made some friends. But I didn't identify, and I couldn't get sober until my sponsor drugged me to what she called a real AA meeting. She called the ones that I went to counterfeit. I did not like my sponsor's AA meetings because they didn't let me share. They actually told me that if they wanted to know how to get drunk, they would call on me. Nobody was sleeping with anybody. There was no gossip, no drama, no excitement. So as I'm sitting there, the deal was I had to go to one of those boring meetings with her every week. And I could pick which one. She had three in her home group. I could pick which night, but I had to go to one of them. And I'm sitting there pouting, judging everyone with my arms crossed, thinking, what a bunch of old, you know, like just unhappy. And without my permission, you guys started to crack that tough ego deep down, just like what Silkworth told to Bill. A woman was explaining how she drove with her girls in the backseat of her car, even when she didn't want to. And in order to get home safe, she had to cover one eye to see the road, to see the lines on the road. I thought I made that up. I did that. A guy said that he was peeing the bed because he'd get so drunk. Well, you know, that never happened to me, of course, but I know somebody else was breaking in my house at night sometimes and peeing right underneath where I was sleeping. And, you know, I know that once I started drinking, I couldn't stop. And I did things that Tony was saying that he did. And I couldn't hold down. I mean, I started identifying with everybody who was sharing. I started going, oh, I did that. Oh, me too. Oh, I felt like that. Oh, I did that. And I had that magic of Me Too. And that's when I started being able to muster the willingness that I had never before been able to put forth. I needed that identification. And I better wrap it up, but I'm going to get through this last page real quick. It also indicated that strenuous work, one alcoholic with another, was vital to temporary sobriety one day at a time for the rest of the life. Oh, it doesn't say that either. Got you guys again. The big book doesn't say one day at a time. It says permanent recovery. Put that on your 10th step and talk to your sponsor about that. We might have to update that, right? No, it's not updatable, because we offer permanent sobriety, permanent recovery. Those are the words that this big book uses. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. This is not a revolving door program. Permanent recovery. Hence, the two men, Bill and Bob, set out to work almost frantically upon other alcoholics arriving in the ward of the Akron City Hospital. Their very first case, a desperate one, recovered immediately. and became AA number three. They're talking about Bill Dotson here. He never had another drink. This work at Akron continued through the summer of 1935. There were many failures, but there was an occasional heartening success. When the broker returned to New York in the fall of 1935, the first AA group had been formed. That's Dr. Bob's home group. That's Akron group number one. And you can visit that home group. It's on Zoom right now. It's at King's School every Wednesday night, I believe at 8 o'clock Eastern, because it's at 5 o'clock my time. And you can go to Dr. Bob's home group if you like. Down at the bottom of the page, I have a quick highlight that I'm going to run by you. The flying blind period. It's four lines up from the bottom of the page. What is the flying blind period? The flying blind period are those first 10 years when we didn't have the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous and we didn't know what the hell we were doing. The traditions are like roadmaps. They're like street signs. They're like, if the road didn't have any line down the middle of it to know when I'm in my lane or when I'm in your lane, if the roads didn't have any signs that said, this is a one-way street, stop. If the roads didn't have signs that say, hey, there's a sharp corner ahead, slow down. That's what we were doing these first 10 years. We were flying blind. We didn't know where the dangerous spots lied ahead. So thank God that every time somebody went off the road and had a wreck on that really windy corner, we went, oh, let's not pretend that didn't happen. Let's write it down. Let's put up a street sign. That's why we have the traditions. That's why we have the literature on the traditions, to not have to make the same mistakes that they already made, so that hopefully we don't have to make those same mistakes over and over and again from when they did, when they were in the flying blind period. That's what that was. And I guess I'll just stop for questions at this point, because we got, what, 15 minutes left? Is that good? Okay.
Thank you so much, Carrie. I love listening to you all the time. Always, 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 always thank you. We've got a few questions coming in, but we could really do with a few more. So I'm just going to start at the start with the first question that came in, and we'll slowly go through them. So, which tenets of the Oxford group did Bill not accept?
I don't know, but I can find out for you. So let me just write that down as we go on to the next question.
Next question was, which pages were you reading from AA Comes of Age?
I think 68. Let me just make sure, though, because I cannot, I always get my favorite pages confused. It was not 68. It must have been, hold on. Yeah, it's 68.
Good memory. Thank you. How long does it take to go through the steps?
That is not, well, okay. That's a good question. That's a really good question. Thank you for that question. I have worked with women who are really desperate, and they, you know, I've picked them up at the homeless shelter. They don't have a job. They don't have kids because their kids have been taken away from them. They don't have, you know, and we can get to work and spend, you know, 8 hours together in the book the first day, maybe 4 hours the next day, and be on the amends process by, I don't know, 30 days sober. And I've had a sponsee start sponsoring others at 2 months sober. Those are the really willing, desperate cases that, again, I mentioned in before that I like working with, because they have that desperation of the dying man. Well, some of the cases like myself who came in and, you know, I hadn't lost everything. I still had the house, the kids, the cars, whatever, right? And quite frankly, I didn't even have an hour for your meeting every day. It's like, don't you know who I think I am? I have a life, thank you. I'm not going to come to a meeting every day. And so it took me a long time to go through my steps because I didn't have that willingness until I got in enough pain in sobriety. In sobriety, in the rooms, to start getting serious. And so I think that it's different for everyone. The longest time, I mean, I think the longest it's ever taken me to get somebody through all 12 steps, I hate to admit this, but it took about almost 2 years, and the shortest time was probably 2 months. So, it's up to the prospect. It's up to the new person. It's up to the alcoholic, not to the sponsor.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Carrie. Next question. When did you have somebody start to write a fourth step?
When they get up off their knees after turning their will and their life over to the care of their creator in the third step.
Sorry, I'm starting to get quite a few questions in now, so I'm just making sure I copy them while I ask you the next one. Do you have a sponsee call you every day?
Oh, God, no. Ain't nobody got time for that. Please don't. That's what I tell my sponsees. Please don't. I mean, everybody's going to be different. The thing with sponsorship, and that's not really what this workshop is about, but I did talk a lot about sponsorship, so I will entertain the question. The thing about sponsorship, and this is a kind of my pitch. Actually, there's multiple women in this room. I'm looking around that have heard this pitch because I sponsor a lot of you guys. So when I first sit down with a new sponsee, whether she's new to the program or new to just me or new to whatever, I explain that there's a wrench for every nut. There's no right way. I mean, it doesn't matter who's right in AA. It matters who's left, right? And so there's so many different ways that we can be sponsored and so many different sponsorship lines. And I'm not here to talk crap about somebody who does it differently than me, because I mean, again, if the way I was shown worked for everyone, nobody would have time for, I don't have time to sponsor the world. So thank God that I'm not for everybody, you know? And so there's sponsorship lines over here that say, let's say, for example, you keep your legs closed for the first 90 days. You don't date in the first year. You sit in the front row in meetings. You call or check in with me at 7:01 every single day for the rest of your life. You know, with all these rules, that works for some people. And then there's sponsorship lines all right. This one and this one and this one and this one and all the way over here. And the other extreme is like, hey, if it ain't in the big book, I got no business telling you to do it. We go with what the big book says. If it's not in there, then it's not my business, you know, and there's that kind of sponsorship. And then there's everything in between, right? And the only thing that I have seen not work for anybody, because I've seen the people in this sponsorship line, they love it. It works for them. And I've seen the people in this one and they love it and it works for them. And although I have my personal opinions on some of the stuff that other people do differently than me, that's ego. I don't get to judge that. I get to say there's a wrench for every nut. And the only thing that I have seen not work for anybody is when the prospect, the newcomer, the green recruit, whatever you're going to call the sponsee, is cherry picking what they like out of this sponsorship line and what they like out of this sponsorship line. And ooh, I like that, but I don't like what they do. Nah. Pick a side and ride, you know, do it and do it wholeheartedly. Get off the fence. And if it doesn't work, sponsorship is not a marriage. Jump lines, but do, you know, give that line give it a chance. That's all. That's my answer.
I think I made a mistake by asking lots of people to put questions in. Flying in now,
so I'll try to keep my answers short.
Bear with me while I try and get through them, because I'm trying to keep a list of them all here. So where are we? You spoke of your home group. Where's the best place to get information on the home group?
I'm sorry. Does it say on my home group or on A home group.
A home group.
Okay. On a home group is in the home group pamphlet. We have a whole pamphlet on the home group, and it's a wonderful pamphlet. And somebody just posted it. Ross just posted it in the chat. So that's, and you know what's good about this is it's nobody's opinion. It's not my opinion. This was written by God. The way I can say that is it was written by our second tradition is God as he may express himself through the group conscience of the United States and Canada, with members from all over the United States and Canada expressing their opinions on every stage of development before any piece of conference approved literature gets created. So this is not one person's opinion. It is 80 years of experience from members, and it's the voice of God is our experience, as our tradition states, which for some reason holds a whole lot more depth and weight than Carrie's opinion. So
I love this next question. Know anything about the first 100 and how many of them stayed sober?
yeah, depending on your source. I have seen 42, and I have seen 78, and I've seen sources that say all sorts of different things. And honestly, how would anybody be able to put a number on that? Because who are we counting? Let's say there's 80 people exactly sober when the first word of the big book was written. By the time the big book was finished, maybe three other people came to a meeting or two. Are we going to count them since they decided AA wasn't for them? Or are we going to count the people who drank again? Are we going to count the people? That's why Bill just said 100. 100. It's a good number. Sounds good. Looks good. Easy to remember. 100 people.
Good answer. And I'm just going to pop the sponsorship pamphlet into the chat because somebody asked me to before I get to the next question. And the next question is,
Multitasking. Nice.
do we give the hope of permanent recovery when they see so many are relapsing and they too have relapsed repeatedly?
I have a lot of opinion about that right now, and so I don't know if I need to pause before answering.
Feel free.
I will tell you that it has been my experience that if the ego is crushed and someone is genuinely, I better just, yeah, we'll go on to the next question.
Thank you for that. Do you feel that breaking down the book while going through the steps spreads the timeline of the steps out too far sometimes? For example, I've always heard people going through 1, 2, 3 sometimes in one day, but unless the sponsee and I have a whole day to spend, it can take weeks.
That is a terrific question. I love that question. Yes. So discernment is so important. And this is one of the things I love this question so much because I could have probably even put it into my spiel and I maybe forgot. I'll take credit for that. I'll take credit for wanting to explain this. So in the chapter Working with Others, it's probably one of our biggest chapters. And it's the chapter entirely devoted to step 12. Okay, we have one entire chapter devoted to one entire step, step 12. And the chapter's really big because we're done with the clear-cut directions and now we get to use discernment. Tradition 9 says AA as such ought never be organized. That means the language of the heart. When I'm 12-stepping someone, when I'm taking someone through the steps, that can't ever be organized. I don't say, well, it takes 12 weeks to get through 12 traditions. I cannot do that. It doesn't work like that. AA as such ought never be organized. That is our normal 12-step work. Committees and business meetings and stuff like that, that's not AA as such. That's the behind the scenes stuff, right? But AA as such cannot be organized. And that's why that chapter is so big because it says, if your prospect is ABC, maybe proceed in this way. But if your prospect is ABC, maybe proceed in this way. And it gives so many different examples of different types of alcoholics and different like stages of their development and stages of their alcoholism, that there's no, it can't be cookie cutter. It can't be cookie cutter. And no two alcoholics are alike. It's like snowflakes. And so where I get one really smart person who has stayed sober, managed to stay sober on grace and self-knowledge for 9 months, and they need to really understand, by the time they ask me, they have 9 months sober because of grace and human power and self-knowledge and meetings and three meetings a day and white knuckling it, then it's like, okay, you need to understand the first step. And we're going to spend some time on that first step. But where I get somebody who's dying of alcoholism, who's like going through withdrawals and they're going to drink, we're going to get through steps 1, 2, and 3, and we're going to get them on their fourth step immediately, because it's a matter of life and death. And after they've had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, then I can help them to start going through and understanding the process when they are helping their alcoholic, their new prospect, which is step 12, through the steps. And I explained to them, you're not alone. Don't be scared. We will sponsor this person together. They won't see me as much, but me and you are going to be doing just as much work behind the scenes as you and your prospect. So everybody's different. And again, you know, if I'm working with a newcomer, chances are I'm not going to start them on the preface. I'm not going to start them on the forewords, but there's a few women in here right now who I just started working with who have, a couple of them have more sobriety time than I have. They've been around, they've been through the steps. We start on the cover page and we're going through the history. We're going through everything. They don't have that desperation of drowning men right now. They're recovered alcoholics. So why not?